This podcast is part of the Gunna Geek Network. The opinions expressed may not represent other podcasts or affiliates of Gunna Geek. Check out more podcasts at GunnaGeek.com and get ready because geekness starts in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussions ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Whitten.
I prefer to jazzercise my demons, but yeah.
And Keir Hansen.
Gallifrey Public Radio. Now we have maths.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But if we get anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again. Welcome to episode 84 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we take a few brief moments from our full schedule of dining, drinking, partying, gambling, and avoidance of all responsibilities whatsoever to sit in a hotel suite with a collection of intelligent people and make wild suppositions and projections about the immediate future of a British science fiction television show. Because damn it, that's what nerds do in Vegas. I am Jay, and with me this week, as always, is Keir. How's it going, Keir?
I am just now sober, thank you.
And special guest Haley. How's it going, Haley?
It's going great.
Awesome. So, yes, we're live from this week from Sin City, Las Vegas, and halfway through the celebration of Geekation 2014. And with so many Whovians among the attendees, we felt it was time to take a snapshot of what we expect to see in Series 8 and what we're expecting from the new Doctor, Peter Capaldi, and see what kind of theories we can apply. And then next week, when the BBC releases new information, throw all that out the window and start over fresh. Yay!
That's just how we do it.
Yeah. So, I mean, we do have some information that's been coming in, some stuff about what episodes we're going to be seeing and things like that. So it's starting to ramp up, and it's starting to get kind of exciting here.
Yeah. I think you can kind of go at it from two different angles. You can start looking at the information that goes from the conjecture to the unconfirmed status to confirmed status. And yeah, it's all interesting things to have. Episode titles. It's nice to know who some of the supporting cast are going to be. But then there's also the obvious things, the sort of the elephants in the room, is the suppositions about what they're going to be doing with the overall arc of the series. And are they actually going to do one this year, whereas last year seemed a little questionable at times. So
yeah, I'm definitely hoping that we get more of a strong hand from Moffat on the overall.
Yeah. As we've been saying, hold on to that side of the showrunner that is the head writer as well as just the executive producer. I mean, you've got talents on both sides of that coin, but you got to make sure that you're flipping that coin as often as you can. So, do we want to take that sort of that larger piece first and then get down into the little details we know about some of the episodes that have been locked in?
Yeah, I think we should do it that way.
I think our feedback, actually, that we've got for this week is a good segue to that.
Yeah, actually, I was going to say, we did get an email from a listener, Nathan, and we're sorry we didn't address this as soon as we got it, but this was just too perfect for what we were talking about today, so we've been holding on to it. So, but he wrote in, and we had been talking about the return of Gallifrey and what that means and how that's going to play into the overall story. So he wrote in and said, I'm actually extremely excited about Gallifrey being found, but for a reason that isn't related to Gallifrey specifically. One thing I love about the classic series is that the Doctor is a, quote, citizen of the universe, if you will. For example, his companions weren't always modern-day humans. He even had fellow Time Lords as a companion, both incarnations being my favorite companions, incidentally. Modern Doctor Who is a little too, humans are the bestest ever, for my taste. Which isn't to say anything bad about humans, but the Doctor was always keen on humans. It's just a bit cloying now, or at least it was with Tennant. So I'm hoping it might signal a potential change back to the more non-Earth-centric stories. Heck, I'd love to see E-Space again, and perhaps a Time Lord companion, or even the return of Romana. I guess it's a bit weird that I'm hoping to see a few more elements from the classic series in terms of non-modern Earth companions and such, since I started watching the show while Matt Smith was the Doctor, but I honestly prefer the classic series scope when it comes to characters and companions and stories. Between Capaldi and the future return of Gallifrey, I guess I'm hopeful that it will bring a little bit of that classic format back. Oh, and a little less of the fantasy elements. Tennant's Doctor being faithed back to life, maybe. Big friendly button, magic wands, and so on. And a return to the science things. So, yeah.
Sci-fi, totally.
He brings up a lot of good points, though. That with the classic series, there was much more of the sci-fi element to it. You know, it was constantly going beyond and pushing the envelope and things like that. And you did have your old standbys, but at the same time, they tried things out all the time. And with New Who, Amy was the biggest departure from the norm because she was Scottish instead of a Londoner. And that's the most radical thing they've done with the Companion so far. So I can definitely see we do need to see some diversity start coming into that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think there's the two sides you need to watch of that. And I absolutely agree with some of the points that he's making about the idea of getting some of those core tenets back again. But there's also exactly what Mark Gatiss had said in his interview at that the Brazilian Expo or whatever it was. I don't mean it was an expo where they all do Brazilians. That's a different thing entirely. It is Vegas. But he was saying that, you know, you run the risk every time you start bringing the Time Lords back into the material. They become a little bit more commonplace or just recognizable. They become household. And he personally likes the fact that in the last few years, they've become these sort of mysterious characters. They've been shrouded in their absence, and that makes them more impactful when you do actually write them into the story. If you drop Gallifrey right back in again, or if Gallifrey truly is found, then does that just become too overworked, and they're no longer going to be that, I don't want to say boogeyman, but, you know, that valuable asset.
Yeah, they become commonplace, and you just start to, you know, you get used to them, and they lose a lot of the mystique, which makes them, you know, more exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I've got little exposure to Classic Who, so my experience mostly comes from the modern stuff, and the Time Lords have been shrouded in mystique for almost the entirety of the new series run.
Yeah, and I've seen, there was a great picture I saw where it was, you know, how Nuvians see Time Lords, and there's this picture of Gandalf and Dumbledore just going at it, this huge wizards battle, and then it's like how classic Whovians see the Time Lords, and there's a bunch of old guys sitting around a table debating the, you know, the tax refund of Rassilon. Yeah. And that really is the difference that we've gotten to at this point.
Yeah, they were at times it was like a parliamentary organization as opposed to these mystical wizards of time that yeah. they've become at this point.
And I mean, at this point, you know, it's like we've gotten enough of the Time Lords or, you know, these incredible people. It's exciting to see it start to get broken down and you know, having the start to see a little bit more of it, and it's not so much just this forum over there that they reference every now and again and start to get a few of the details, but at the same time, I don't want too much because they have done a really good job of building up the mystique.
Hmm. Yeah. Is there a kind of a happy medium in there? Is there something that would allow us to be able to bring them back into the mix, but as a result of some circumstances, they remain somewhat inaccessible, or that an arrangement or an agreement between they and their beloved or you know, beheaded, something... you know, Rebel Time Lord keeps them from being an occurrence every 3 to 4 episodes.
I don't know. I mean, it's going to be a tough balance, and that's the thing, is you have to have someone that understands that is a very difficult balance, and they're going to have to work at it to maintain it. So it's going to be rough one way or the other. But I would rather the err on the side of caution and just not bring them in to, you know, just to keep it going.
It's tough to avoid. I mean, that anniversary episode really teed up everybody's expectations to, okay, I mean, they left it hanging. You know, it is out there. It just needs to be located. Now what?
Well, and then the very next episode, we've got them coming back in saying, oh, hey, new regeneration set for the Doctor. We're back in force, and it's just, oh, wait, we're trapped on the other side of this crack. And if that's what it, you know, if they've got it to where it's, you know, this monumental task to get in contact with the Time Lords, to do something like that where it's something where, you know, you risk tearing apart the whole fabric of space-time and whatnot, then, you know, you're going to have an excuse for not going to it very often.
Break universe in case of emergency.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or is it something where it's determined that it's in their best interests or for their own protection to be left on that side, in this, you know, this pocket universe or wherever it is that they are on the other side of the rift?
Okay, when was the last time that the Time Lords actually said, you know what, we're going to take one for the team and do the best thing for the universe instead of looking out for us first?
I have no memory of that ever happening.
I cannot confirm nor deny.
Yeah, so it's, I think that it's going to have to be like a mechanical limitation of, we can't get back. We can access certain times, certain fret, you know, just put all kinds of limitations on it, and then, you know, move at the speed of plot.
Or it could be there's some threat to them in our universe, so they'll stay in their own universe with blackjack and hookers.
Well, we did see that in the Christmas special, though. I mean, it's like they were wanting to come back, and everybody was like, oh, hey, look, this is the tunnel they're going to come out of. Set up the roadblock.
Yeah, it's the cat at the mouse hole.
Yeah.
But is that something where it's accepted that they are in the safer position where they are, and every once in a while there may be some miraculous line of communication, but it's no more than that, just communication. It's not the finger of God every once in a while.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for at best. But like I said, I would rather they just err on the side of caution.
Mm, okay. Not to mention the fact that Time Lords are assholes.
Well, there is that fact.
Yeah. Okay. Some of the other aspects that we know we're going to be dealing with, we've got some recurring characters, and we've been very careful not to refer to any of these changes as introductions of new recurring villains. We're not referring to anybody as new companions.
Right.
So we know about the whole Danny Pink discussion, and the fact that we're going to be spending a little bit more time at Coal Hill Elementary.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if this does turn into a secondary companion, sort of a la Rory. You know, I mean, they're kind of setting it up that way, or at least that's how it seems, where you've got a character that you can go back to, is going to be your touchstone for the modern day stuff. You know, very much like Mickey was in the first series.
Yeah, I would have said it seemed like more of a Mickey setup, because he doesn't always have to be there. Rory became part of that working set, whereas Mickey was usable and discardable. Sorry. I'm sorry, Noel. I'm sorry if you're listening. By the way, you owe me dinner. But especially because of the fact that what I was kind of picking up was maybe something that's a combination of the kind of the Rose-Mickey pairing, and something that really goes back, and this is Moff being Moff, and going back to Barbara and Ian.
Yeah.
I mean, you're at the school.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm still holding that. I want to see Ian back for just like, you know, half a second. Just a quick cameo would be brilliant at that
point. We knew they made him the superintendent or the headmaster. Chancellor. Yeah, head counselor for the school. And we know that we're going to have at least two episodes from some of the shooting that they've been doing, and some of the episode titles. There's just now, I've just determined that there was an unconfirmed title for, I think, what's going to fall as episode 6 in the block that's referred to so far, and this is one of Gareth Roberts' scripts, the Coal Hill Disaster. So that's... we're going to be, you know, spending a considerable amount of time within the school proper. We may actually be able to see Ian Chesterton in some form. He's still been active. I mean, he still goes in and does some Big Finish audio and such. So
we might get to see Angie and Artie again, too. That'd be great.
You shut your mouth.
Shoved in lockers.
Okay. Nice going on about cast. Something good to about see
him being from the future. Stick him in a locker. They suck.
Okay, I wouldn't mind seeing him go through that. But. It's like there were two confirmed deaths at the school this weekend. Yay! all right, so do we want to talk about some of the episodes that we know are coming up?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the first one, obviously, written by Stephen Moffat. We don't have a title for this, but we know this is the one that we're going to get the Pat and Oster gang back in, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, they've all been confirmed. We have a couple of other names in there as far as, you know, you can't really draw much from the character names other than the fact that you've got somebody who's been cast as the restaurant droid. literally, that's their IMDb credit for the episode, is to be the restaurant droid. So how can you go wrong with that? And some of the things, the tweets and statements that have been going around, you know, Ben Wheatley himself said, you know, he's extremely excited and honored to be asked to direct the first two episodes, because he does have the first two slots. Mm-hmm. Looking forward to working with Peter and finding out where Steemo is planning to take the new Doctor. Jenna Coleman says, we're picking up right where we left off. Obviously, it's the way we do these things these days. And
except when we need to avoid something like we got stuck in the Doctor's time stream and have to get out. But no, it's the 50th anniversary, so let's just ignore that and ride the motorcycle into the TARDIS.
Yeah, why not? But you also, specifically from Steemo, he said that he's enjoying the fact that within this episode and putting them up against the Paternosters, that he's able to make the Doctor more of a stranger again. Kind of like when we had the return of the surly 11th, mm-hmm. You know, the change of the overcoat and that whole segment. And that actually led for some really good chemistry, because you started seeing Vostra as a compassionate character who's trying to help a friend who doesn't even want her help at the time and that sort of thing. So I think that's a nice tee up.
And then the second one that we've got, all we know is that it's written by Phil Ford. I haven't been able to find any more information out about it other than the, you know, writing and directing.
Well, this is the one that's the rumored Dalek episode.
Okay.
Wheatley, who directing it, said that, you know, and he quotes, you know, there's stuff I can't talk about, but it's been very, very exciting for me. And then Phil Ford came out and, like, made these kind of unusual tweets, these very cryptic tweets about them. And he's like, oh, I'm over the moon working in a TARDIS, and I don't know how I've managed to keep quiet about it this far for this long, and it's been a huge honor to write for DW at any time, so being able to write for Capaldi's second adventure is that, you know, times infinity. But then he comes out and he starts giving these little tweets, and people say, you know, can you just give us anything about the episode? And he comes out and says, behind enemy lines. And I'm like, well, can you provide any more? And he comes out and says, la sound. And that's all he said. Take what you're going to do from that. Yeah. So, and this, yeah, this is the one where we were supposedly are going to start to stack 12th against Daleks. So
that's going
to
be interesting. I can't wait, because I know Capaldi is a huge fan of the show, and he's watched it since he was a kid. And I'm like, I want to see him up against Daleks, because I just, as an actor, that would be incredible to, you know, face down your childhood monsters, and it's going to be exciting to see how he does with this stuff.
You can get a great appreciation of this, of the breadth of the show, or of the program in its entirety, by watching each Doctor's first reaction to seeing a Dalek again. And you go ahead and clip that. I wish somebody had done some sort of a little mash of that. You know, the little 15-second clips from each one. So if anyone out there wants to start to put it together, go right ahead, because I think it'd be really something interesting to see. You know, some of them it's shock, some of them it's disgust, some of them it's terror. Some of, you know, and it goes on and on and on. You think about Eccleston's mm-hmm. first response seeing it in the episode Dalek. I mean, it's just it's great stuff, and especially with the expressive nature of Capaldi and how much he can carry facially. I can't wait to see how he, you know, blows up, you know, or whether they just have to bleep the entire thing because he gets it, you know.
Oh yeah, that's gonna be fun. Then the third one that we've got is the
controversial.
This is gonna be the Robots of Sherwood, and supposedly this is the Robin Hood episode. We've seen pictures of Jenna Coleman in a stunning red dress.
Renfair, Clara.
And this is the one that, unfortunately, well.
You know, go ahead, just say it. Just say it. You gotta get it out of your system.
This is
Mark Gatiss.
Yes, this is the Mark Gatiss pinned episode, and I'm just so completely terrified of what we're going to see.
Yeah. But it's Paul Murphy at the helm. So I've got a little bit of hope there. I think one of the things that's been making this a little difficult, at least from the rumor mill's perspective, is just because of the fact that this has so much implication of it could possibly be using a fictional character within a historical segment.
Yeah, but I mean, then again, we've said, you know, no one has confirmed that this is Robin Hood. It could just be something that takes place in Sherwood, which...
I don't know. Some of the actual character assignments that they've been discussing, Tom Riley being described as Robin Hood, Ben Miller, who we talked about last week, as the Sheriff of Nottingham, you know, and then you've got Alan Adale and a couple of other supporting characters. So, and we've got starting to get more and more names, and there's a lot of photography since it's one of the ones in the production block that's been most recently shot, and they had to do it out in the Forest Far there in North Wales? Northeast? I don't even know. Grab a map. But there's a ton of on-set footage and some video as well. That was the one where they've got the, you can't hear the audio, but they mouthed it out, and they could tell that Capaldi's like screaming off to someone off camera that I don't always have a plan, which changes with every doctor. I've got a plan. I don't have a plan. I make my plans up as I go. I always have a plan. I've got no effing clue what my plan is. So.
Yeah.
What if it is just a Ren Faire?
Yeah. Ooh. Well, they did have all these pictures of the guy who was of Tom Riley, you know, in his Robin Hood esque gear with his cell phone in his hand. It was between takes. Yes. But they had all this footage of him. I'm like, maybe they can work that in. Hold on, I gotta take this. Just 1 second. Robin of the Hood.
No, I'm thinking like reverse Time Warrior, though, where, you know, in Time Warrior, when Sarah Jane comes out of the TARDIS and she's convinced that she's at a Ren Faire and she's going up against Iron Grodd, and she's like, oh no, you know, cut this out. Just what's going on here? What kind of play is this? And I reverse that. Have Dr. and Clara show up, and they're like, they're convinced they're in like Robin Hood, England. And it's like, yeah, no, this is, we're right outside of London here. It's just, no. You can take the bus back.
What show was that done before where they thought that they were in the middle of something and it was actually a bunch of LARPers?
I don't know.
Was it a Supernatural episode?
It might have been, yeah.
Yeah, it could have been, yeah. Yeah, because I think that was the one with Felicia Day.
With Felicia Day, yeah. They thought something magical was going on. No, it's just a Ren Faire. Oh, wait, there is something magical going on.
Episode 4, as far as we know, the working title for it is Listen. That's one of Stimo's scripts, Doug McKinnon directing.
This excites. I mean, anytime Stephen Moffat stops and writes an episode, especially one that's mid-season, you know, when he bookends he always bookends it, so you know the first one and the last one are going to be big. But when he takes one in the middle of the season, it's, you know, that he's like, I have a story that I want to write.
Yeah, there's something he's pushing.
Yeah.
And you got an introduction of a new monster, too. That was the one that we kept seeing in some of those.
Oh,
the Minotaur. Yeah, the un-Minotaur.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I mean, I'm excited about this one. This one seems like it's going to be kind of fun.
Mm-hmm. Then we go ahead to episode 5, tentatively titled Time Heist. Doug McKinnon again directing, Stephen Thompson writing on this one. And this is the one where we know we're getting the introduction of the new, the evil banker woman.
Miss Delphox.
Yep. So we'll see how that one comes along. That apparently has the production crew really pleased because they, from what I understand, this is production block 2, so they haven't really been doing more than some of the smaller location shots. There's a site out there, I'll put it in the notes, that actually pieces together based on each production block and each episode where they've shot confirmed footage around Cardiff and Cardiff proper. So you can kind of piece some of that together.
Okay. And then episode 6, you said that you found a possible working title?
Yeah, well, this is a Gareth Roberts script, Paul Murphy directing, and this is actually going to be the first one that according to the allocation, this is where we'll first see Sam Anderson playing Danny Pink. And that's the one where the rumored or the unconfirmed working title is The Coal Hill Disaster.
Okay, that's right.
I thought I read Kill the Moon as a possible title for that one, too.
I'm seeing them reverse, and it's calling Kill Moon as episode 7.
Okay.
But then again, these are both from a production block that has yet to be finalized, because they try to save themselves production time by shooting segments based on their locations. So they're grabbing footage chunks for episodes that are well down the pipe, so that they can keep their wardrobe and prop teams consolidated.
Do you think that the interchangeability of those titles might refer to the possibility of a two-parter?
That's what I was thinking, especially if they're doing two at the school, if it's a two-part episode.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, yeah, but you've got a different production team entirely, because the Kill the Moon episode is supposed to be Paul Wilmhurst directing, and they haven't even said who the writer was going to be for that one, as far as anything I've been able to find. But yeah, I could see those two, because the one that they got slated for episode 8 is completely unrelated. If they're going to do any kind of a twofer, this would be the right block to
and
do
that
it.
Would also be right mid-season to do
which,
it.
Which, yeah, that's usually where they aim it, unless it's like a big event, like, you know, the Impossible Astronaut. Usually it's right in the middle of the season when ratings are starting to kind of like, it's like, oh yeah, it's on, oh hey, look, it's back. You know, it's that's usually when they try and pump it in, just to give that little bit of a bump.
Okay. But, yeah, although I like to think with the working title is Kill the Moon, that we got to get Strax back in there so that he can just curse the Moonites.
Damn dirty Moonites.
You know, whenever I hear about trying to destroy the moon, I always remember the 7-Up commercial with Orlando Bloom in it. Or not Orlando Bloom. Orlando Jones.
just like Orlando Bloom.
They're so similar.
Only with more tan. Episode 8. Unconfirmed writer on this gentleman by the name of Frank Cottrell Boyce, who I found out actually worked with Danny Boyle on a couple of films and wrote the script for the movie Millions, if you ever saw that, about the kid who finds the suitcase along the railroad tracks with £1 million in it.
No.
Good film. Definitely worth checking out. But he's the unconfirmed writer for the episode, Paul Wilmshurst directing, and this is the one that has the unconfirmed title of Mummy on the Orient Express.
Okay.
So this is going to be our nice historical piece.
All right, so do we think that, because I could see this going either way, is this going to be a scary episode, holy crap, there's a mummy, there's no way to get off this train, you know, is this going to be Snakes on a Train, kind of like them trying to make it a horror thing, or do we think that they're just going to go full-blown Scooby-Doo on this one?
I want to see this Scooby Sherlock. I mean, it's Murder on the Orient Express with an undead, you know, pharaoh or what have you.
I mean, like, I could see them going either way, but I'm kind of leaning towards Scooby-Doo. I want them to go completely campy and just make it hilarious.
Yeah. It would give you some reassurance that they're going to use some of Capaldi's comedic chops, which are honed to a razor sharp point when he wants to use
it. Oh, yeah.
If they're coming off of a serious two-part episode like we think they might be, then it would be a good time for a Scooby-Doo episode.
Yeah, it really would.
Yeah, but, yeah. And then, yeah, because they always have to be certain to a certain degree that they're going to keep tapping the younger audience. If they start going with some really complex material for a couple of episodes, they've got to lighten it up a little bit and make sure the kids are still watching.
Right. So then episode 9 has the working title of Flatline.
Mm-hmm. And it's the only piece of information that I find about it.
No writer, no director, nothing. Just it's that's all we have at this point.
Right. And it sort of goes on like that. You've got, you know, three more slated on there for episodes 10, 11, and 12. They don't technically consider the Christmas special to be episode 13. We sort of treat that as a working. We know that Stimo's going to be writing that one because he always closes out his season.
Well, yeah. And he's been doing... Hasn't he done all the Christmas specials since he took over?
Since the dawn of time.
Yeah. Well, no. So, but since he took over as showrunner, he's done all of them, hadn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is creative license.
Okay. So we can kind of assume that one easily, but... Yeah.
So, but at this point, now that you've seen, you know, some of the information we have about the up and down nature or some of the cloudy nature of some of these episodes, I don't see anything in there that tells us we're going to be on the hunt for Gallifrey.
Yeah, it definitely seems like it could be the thread that kind of ties it all together, maybe. Like the Doctor mentioning something early on and it's that's the thing that gets tagged on the end or something like that. Or it could just be completely ignored until the end of the series when Stimo brings it up again, slams it in there, and it's like, holy crap, look what's happening, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we've gone on and on about our concerns about the fact that this is going to be one of those, you know, add 5 minutes to the end of episodes to make sure that there's some sort of a tying thread.
And like a bad wolf type thing where it's kind of in the background and we see anything this episode?
Yeah, start watching for blinky lights. Right. The blinky lights theory.
Hey, that paid off. That paid off. But, oh, wait. No, it didn't.
But yeah, I mean, that would give me some reassurance that they're really having some fun with the series as a whole, rather than just really making, let's take each one of these episodes and just make a real prize out of each one. But if you want to look at it long view, you know, we're missing the great Clara experiment. You know?
Yeah.
Don't you think he could have just forgot based on the last line of the last episode we saw?
And not being remembering how to fly it?
Exactly. Maybe he lost something in translation or in...
It's been a while since we've had a really a really disoriented regeneration.
That's true. I mean, with Tennant, he took a nap for an episode. With 11, you know, it was just...
He just wanted lunch.
Yes. Nothing on this menu looks good.
And then he went away.
You're Scottish, aren't you? Fry something.
But if I remember, 8 was all over.
Oh, yeah. No, he was completely, like, amnesia.
Eight was off his nut. 5 was off his nut. Six was like, really...
He was bipolar.
He just went mad.
But he strangled Perry, so we forgive him.
Yeah, we let that one go. But no, I think that would be actually... Which would make some of the sense of the fact that they have to bring in the Paternoster gang as a sort of a protective cover. You know, Clara can help to a certain degree, but she's never had to go through this.
And I mean, let's not forget that this is... They gave him a fresh set of regenerations. So this is unprecedented so far in the show. So Stimo has blank slate at this point. He can write any fracking thing he wants, and we can all be like, well, okay, maybe. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. It's I want to see something different than just, you know, what we've gotten so far.
Yeah, this is also an opportunity for them to do, as we've mentioned a couple times, the idea of having the carryover character. You know, when we came into the Smith era, we had new Doctor, new companions, new TARDIS, new, and there wasn't any of that tying thread that allowed us to be able to see the transition's impact on other characters. Now we've got a team of supporting characters that are going to have to jump in to the assist on this because it's unfamiliar to Clara, but we've got all the impression that
she
Vostra
understands.
And Jenny know this.
Well, okay, so Clara understands the concept of regeneration. She knows what's going on. Do we have anything saying that Vastra and Jenny understand anything about it? Because the first time we see them is A Good Man Goes to War, which was 11. So, I mean, they know that the Doctor is a Time Lord, but do they know anything about the Time Lords? Do they understand that regeneration even happens, much less the process they go through?
I would think a Santarin would, and Vastra might as well. Strex, right. Yeah.
Just the long-standing. Yeah. The only other thing that I can think of, and this would make the actual, I mean, you talk about the button on this to really make it a strong start to it, is the one individual who could be there to help handhold through this rocky period would be Alex Kingston.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a good reason to have her.
Bring her in there, one, you know, hand on the hospital bed kind of thing, and get her out of there before this, before the fan base starts going, wait, no.
No, but
roll the tape back.
I think that if we had the Paternoster gang being confused and Clara happened to be the one to walk them through it, that could be an interesting change in the dynamic. Because everyone's expecting, you know, Vastra to come in and be the force that she was that in the previous Christmas special. You know, so if we had Vastra completely just confused as to what was going on and Clara being the one that has to step up, that could go a long way to validating Clara as the, you know, this supposedly fantastic companion, but it would also make for an interesting story that we don't often get.
Okay. Yeah. So. I'm just thinking that she also has the lingering psychic link there, the dream state link with River. Which would keep her from actually being
not in have River the but Clara channeling River.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, do we still have that, though? Because that was in The Name of the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had the 50th anniversary, which we didn't get anything. Then we had the Christmas special, which we didn't get anything. You know, we had River fading away because Clara had gone into the time stream.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, at this point, they could very easily say, no, that's gone, it's done away with, and, you know, it all makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those tricky things where, yes, they could bring it back, but they don't have to, and it could go any way and make sense.
All right. Well, then I guess we can wrap this up here by going with some of the wild conjecture part of our day, which is, since we're talking about characters who may or may not, should or should not make any sort of an appearance in there, we've got public outcry at all times. Where's Jack?
Yeah.
Is there going to be a Jack?
Well, and I mean, that's the thing is...
The only thing I have trouble with Jack being in there is, how are they going to explain away Paul being in Torchwood and Jack?
I think that would be less of an issue as, you know, all the things that happened in Miracle Day that haven't been addressed at this point, and bringing him in on Doctor Who.
True. Yeah. As they start pulling those franchises farther and farther apart, you know, is there any room now for any crossover anymore?
And I think the biggest thing is the fact that, you know, Jack was a creation of Stephen Moffat. You know, he was introduced in the Empty Child and the Doctor Dances, which is a Moffat-penned episode. And people are like, okay, why don't we have him back? It's like, because he went off and did this other show, and it went completely off the rails at some point, and there's just no way to tie him back in. But apparently, though, I know I talked about this at one point, though, Russell T. Davies actually told Stephen Moffat that he has a theory on how Capaldi could have played the part in the Vesuvius, the fires of Pompeii, and in Torchwood, and it all makes sense with him being the Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, are we ever going to get this theory? I don't know, because Seema was like, no, it was actually really impressive, and it made sense. If you don't include it in the show, that's fine, but I want to know what this theory is.
Russell also likes the continued attention.
That's a valid point, but...
So we also, we know it's been kind of quelled at this point, but there was some direct discussion at some of the more recent cons, and expos and things, some discussion with Paul McGann as to whether or not he had been approached to do anything more, or his interest levels in doing anything more. And we got some kind of cold water news back on that.
Yeah. He was like, I'm always interested, but you know, it's basically nothing's going to happen, but it might.
Yeah, he's.
Thanks for that.
Thanks for clearing that right up.
Write that down. That's gold.
I don't want to say no because it's possible cash down the line. Let's have an urgent day.
Yeah. Well, and we've mentioned this. We'll be able to get into this more in a couple of weeks when we finally get around to our Doctors Revisited for 8th. The phenomenal material that he's been putting into some of the extended content kind of gives you, it can fill that need for you. You know, if you really felt that you didn't get enough of 8th, you can definitely get that fix. And he's done some material that's really dramatic. He's done some hilarious bits too. They do their little monthly shorts that are like 20, 25 minute episodes he's riotous. So it'd be great to see. I'm still going to hold out for those webisodes. I'd still like to see the slow descent into the War Doctor.
I'd love to see that, but I feel like at this point we are approaching Series 8 at a rapid clip. I know it seems like it's far off, but I think if we were going to get webisodes to hold us over, we'd have seen at least one by now.
You think?
Not really. I could see them, you know, summer, when summer really gets here, starting to dish out stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, you start getting the single screen teaser posters and that sort of thing. Mm. Not the end is near, but whatever tagline they're going to stick on the series opener, you know, land this thing, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, that would be the time to put out the 30-second, the 45-second, you know, stir the pot.
But see, that I can see them putting stuff out to build up hype for the new series, but if they're going to go into stuff previously, like with the War Doctor and things like that, that's not when you want to put that out, because that's drawing attention away from the upcoming series. That's drawing it more towards what has previously happened.
Very true. Yep. Nope, so. That's valid.
Unless what happened with him is going to tie into the events of Season 8.
Possibly. Again, and that's another thing. We've never really... You have to bear in mind, just as we've had certain Doctor's regenerations that are extremely rocky, there are also entire iterations of the Doctor that do or do not have cognizance and full working memory of some of their previous iterations. Mm. So he could be one where he's got, you know, because of what we've just been most recently exposed to in terms of the 50th and the aftermath, that he has a much better day-to-day working knowledge of the atrocities and the impact. So maybe he's bearing more of that luggage. Or maybe he has absolutely none. He's blissfully ignorant.
Yeah. Could go either way.
So, and the last thing was, there was also, they were talking to Tom Baker because of, you know, everybody's squee factor having him appear in the 50th, and discussing whether or not they'd ever work the curator, as they want to refer to him, into anything down the road. And in his usual Baker-esque fashion, he said that if he was allowed to work with the script into something that he thought was quite droll, he might be convinced to be involved.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like
Thank
Tom
you,
Baker.
Lord Tom.
I know we made reference to it last week, but the we always joke about the Sixth Doctor having the ego, but no, it's Tom Baker that's got the ego that just completely eclipses Six.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, well, I think that's about all we've got this week, but did anybody in the room have any wild theories you want to throw out there? And
or just a wish list, really.
True mine already, so I'm good.
No, so, I don't know. I'm very excited about what we've got coming, but it's with everything we've gotten from Steemo up to now, it seems like trying to make sense of anything is just a fruitless gesture. So, I don't know.
I'm glad he hasn't been actively throwing a lot of vague statements and red herrings out there. He's not... At least at this point in the cycle, he's not trying to screw with viewers' heads yet.
Yeah, well, it's coming.
Give it time.
Yeah, that'll come around. I'm just gladly right now that we can just look back and say, okay, they're shooting here. I've got that guy in that costume. This is the title. He's directing. He's worked on things. You know, Ben Wheatley is a very dark director, so maybe this is going to be kind of a troubling episode. Da 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 da.
No, it's coming though. Eventually, one day he's going to say, "I'm just going to throw this out there and take what you want from it." Light swords. Yeah, and it's just going to cause all kinds of stuff.
I came up with this cracker of an idea after I fell off the toilet and banged my head the other day. You're going to love it. It's great.
Fuel the TARDIS through trash and a little coffee maker. But yeah, next week we're going to be returning to our Doctors Revisited series and taking a look at the Seventh Doctor with Sylvester McCoy. So,
the Mad Magician.
I'm looking forward to this one, because he's, at least with a... with his companion, it was definitely setting stuff up for what we got in New Who.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And yes, you talk about actors who were saddled with some of the toughest material to work with, you know, as we're mid-80s at this point. So in terms of some of the things that they were trying to throw into the show to keep the ratings above water and such, and trying all kinds of schemes from time to time, but in the midst of it all, you've got an actor with tremendous talent who found a lot of ways to be able to make that shine. So it's you know, was it overshadowed by the nature of where the program was at the time, or was it just a matter of, well, you know, the light was starting to blink in the corner and you just couldn't escape it? But we're looking at specifically his work next week. So
right, yeah, definitely so. All right, well, this has been episode 84 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying Vegas.
And this is Gear saying, "You don't recognize me? But you're the Doctor. The next Doctor. Or the next but one. A future Doctor, anyway. But nope, don't tell me how it happened. Although, I hope I don't just trip over a brick. That'd be embarrassing.
And this is Haley saying, look, booze.
Yeah, we got about 4 gallons of rum we gotta get to. Let's wrap this up. Adelson?
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows by calling 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1477 to leave us a voicemail. You can head to GallifreyPublicRadio.com to leave comments on each episode. There you can also keep up to date on all the latest news and gossip, as well as what's going on in the community. Also, make sure to head over to GunnaGeek.com to find out lots of other high-quality, geek-centric shows. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2014.